This is Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk on Devil Radio 92.7. Now, here are your hosts, Dr. Tim Slecker and Dr. Johnny Lupinacci. Educated educators talking education.
Oh, it is Tuesday night again. It is Johnny Lupinacci, Tim Slecker. Educated educators talking education. That's Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Johnny, welcome back.
Hey.
I gave you a pass last week because, you know, we said you were doing the daughter thing, making sure staying on the school board, you know, being a contributing member to a democracy, shaping the school board. And the question is, did you bring up any, you know, anything that made any of the school board people uncomfortable?
I don't think so. I'm kind of a mediator kind of guy. And it was, the most important thing is, as a former teacher, is really just being a community member that's there for things like curriculum night and open house and things. Because, you know, we're there when things aren't going well as upset stakeholders in the community. It's important to be there when things are going well, too. Mm-hmm. And I'm a big, we've been talking about positive energy around things right now and really focusing on what we have learned over the last few years. And, you know, it's a great segue into tonight. We got a special guest because it's really about how our young people are engaged and cared for.
I was going to ask you, Johnny, did the question come up? What is school for? At your school board, did you put that to anybody? What are we doing this? Why are we here? What is this for? Right? No,
I mean, I didn't explicitly. It's kind of an undertone of where we've been for at least the last year. In terms of, as reports come out that frame things as learning loss, or that there are, you know, that there are different ways to understand where our students' academic performances are. And here in the state of Washington, there's a high focus right now on social emotional learning measures and whatnot. And so, you know, I think it's good that it's put explicitly what are schools for, and that we have some honest conversations around it, because that's a really important question. Why do we have them? And what purpose are they serving right now in our communities and for the future?
Yeah, and what should they be serving? In fact, we have an expert. Check out.
Sure do.
Oh, man. John Warner. John, he's the writer, editor, speaker, researcher, consultant, and author of 8 books, including Why They Can't Write, Killing the 5-Paragraph Essay and Other Necessities, and The Writer's Practice, Building Confidence in Your Nonfiction Writing. 20 years of college experience, also 11 years as a contributor to Inside Higher Ed, which I love John's article in Inside Higher Ed. He is a national voice on issues of faculty labor, institutional values, and writing pedagogy. Welcome to Busted Pencils, John Warner. How you doing, John?
I'm good. I'm very glad to be with you guys tonight.
What's this been now? Over a year that we've been trying to get you lined up on this show?
Yeah, I mean, even longer. I think it was when Why They Can't Write came out, or not long, which was like 2018, 2019. And then
it's hard to get happened. Your people are hard to get through. I mean, you know, they put a wall around you. It's hard. It's hard when you're somebody like you. You've got stuff up.
I'll have to talk to my minions about making sure the good people make it through the gates.
But yeah, so John, thank you though. And what this article, and I said, anybody, please just Google John Warner's name. We'll have some links in the podcast later when we put it up. But the piece here though, that it just caught me a couple weeks ago. And very simply and very eloquently labeled or titled, What is School For? And I was thinking about it. I was like, this is the time I need to reach back out to John to bring him back, because at this point, we needed to dig deep into this question, because it's something Johnny and I do quite regularly. But you were very explicit. And what is it that prompted you to write What is School For?
So this was my response to a large package of sort of opinion pieces the New York Times published, maybe a couple weeks before I did mine, that asked that question, what is school for? And a bunch of important people from various arenas and walks of life answered this question, all in different ways and in a variety of interesting ways. But none of the people who answered the question primarily identify as educators or teachers or instructors, although some of them do work in higher education or education. And none of the answers really were satisfying to me, because one of the trends I noticed across these pieces was that school is a means to an end, be it a good citizen, mm-hmm. or to learn about the earth, or to prove that you're meritorious, that you have sort of this testing ground for who you are, or sorting students and ranking students. And
to get a good job.
To get a good job. All these things we think that school is for. And none of those answers satisfied me, because I think they don't take into account what school is, which is an experience in real time that students have in school. And so if we're going to think about what school is for, we should think about the activities of school, what students do in school, how those things impact students, you know, on a day-to-day basis, month-to-month, semester-to-semester, year-to-year. And so my answer to this question was, school is fundamentally to be engaged. If we have a purpose for school, it's to switch students into the on position about all these things everyone else wrote, right? We should mm-hmm. Engage them around issues of citizenship, or specific academic disciplines, or being stewards of the environment, which was one of the pieces. But in order to do that, they have to be actually interested and engaged in what's happening in school. And without that, I don't know how we achieve anything else.
Well, I mean, so yeah, just for for people listening, the piece is what is school for? You can find it at educationalendeavors.substack.com. And you said there's 8 different writers. One person says school is for everyone, social mobility, merit, making citizens, connecting to nature, learning to read. I threw in the one there to get a good job. And you kind of come down on this, okay, that's all great, but to be engaged. And that, to be engaged, I think, you know, as a teacher, I hear that yearning in there to say, those are all interesting things that might happen while we're at school that they laid out. But if we're not engaging people, and I would say, don't we have a serious issue with engagement? I mean, was it 2017? I shared with you that Gallup poll we talked before the show, where, you know, and Michael Fullan in his work lays this out, that essentially from kindergarten all the way through up to 10th grade, you can essentially lose about 10 points of your quote engagement there. So every year spent in school takes away students' interest in school. John, you kind of really laid out there the reality of going to school is for engagement. The question, though, then is that why are we so involved in all of the other things except for engagement?
It's really, you know, to me, all the stuff is systemic and structural. And it's evidenced in how in students' attitudes around school. You know, I've been worried about this stuff for years, because one of the things I would encounter with working with college students was everything they were doing was for some future benefit, right? And there's an anecdote I tell in Why They Can't Write, and I use it often when I illustrate this stuff. I had a student in a literature class, and we had read a novel that kind of had a theme about, like, what are you going to do with your life, and how do you become passionate about the world and this kind of thing. And I asked a sort of innocuous question, like, well, what did this novel make you think of? And a student, young woman, sophomore, junior in college, raised her hand and said, I learned that I can't wait. And I'm like, that's great. I was like, seize the day. Yes, you can't wait. You must live your life. And I was going off on how great I thought that was. And then somebody else was like, no. What I mean is, I can't wait until I retire so I can do everything that I want to do in life. She had sort of conceived of all of her education as sort of just preparation for the real thing that comes later. And for me, school is the, when you're in school, school is the real thing. That's the thing you're there to do. You're there to be in school and you're there to be engaged by school. You know, the ages between 5 and 22 are part of your life. Right. So why should we have this system that says none of this stuff matters until you reach graduation? And maybe not even then, because you're going to have to go to graduate school. You're going to get a job, have to get a job or go get more education, all this kind of stuff. That just seems like a recipe for unhappiness, really. You know, not just disengagement, but worse, stress, anxiety, depression, wondering what the heck we're doing and why we're doing it.
But if you think about that, you know, and Johnny, welcome back. We lost you there, a little internet difficulty, but Johnny Lupinacci is back. Oh, and hey, Busted Pencils, 844-967-2789. Our guest, John Warner, we're talking about his piece, School. What's it for? What is school for? Johnny, what do you think? Is it a systemic issue? Is it, you know, is John, I really want to go where I think John's getting to in this idea of, because there's kind of a mindfulness moment here that I kind of want to bring up too. But Johnny, you know, a couple of thoughts before we go to first break.
Well, yeah, Tim, I lost the session there. So I'll have to loop back around and listen later, but you know, following this conversation, I think, you know, it's both, right? We have a systemic, larger kind of big umbrella question here. But we have a really, you know, kind of cultural shift or a need for a cultural shift around that, exactly that question. Why, what do we hope that they accomplish and what do we hope to get out of them? And so I think these are big questions to be asking. And I'm excited for our guest, his writing in general, but especially this kind of moment around what does it mean to be engaged?
Well, you think about that, Johnny, right? I mean, it's like we've been doing this show, what now, 3 years together live like this? And I mean, if you think about it, that's what we're asking every week. What is school for? We're in some way, shape, or form, that's the essential question. So when John hits that in that piece, it's like, oh my God, we got to get him on Busted Pencils, because at the heart of this is what we talk about. What is the reality? Why are we in school? Democracy, you know, whatever you wanted to say. We got more when we come back with our guest, John Warner, Busted Pencils, Fully Leaded, back after the break. We're talking about right now, Busted Pencils, Fully Leaded, Education Talk, Educated Educators Talking Education. Our guest, John Warner, we're talking about his piece, What is School For? Talking about this, saying the biggest, you know, wanting to get John on the show is that Johnny and I, since we've been doing the live show now, have been for over 3 years, just saying it's like this is kind of the conceptual main big point that we're always kind of, you know, they're not minutia topics as if they're not relevant, but we, you know, we're digging into this. It's really nice to have an opportunity tonight to kind of go back out and say, whoa, let's answer this question. What is school for? Because if we don't have a good answer, I mean, we really start to think about that. So, Johnny, I was, you know, in a break, and I said this in the first segment, you know, but what is school for? And I used to do this with my teacher education students all the time, is kind of pose that question. So we would get into this larger conceptual content idea of going, and, you know, for me, growing up in the 70s in Pittsburgh, I mean, it got pounded into me, man. You were in school to get a good job. You were to get a good job. I mean, that's what it was for. Johnny, you have any thoughts? Like, I mean, do you have anything that was pounded into you? What is school for?
I mean,
yeah. I know you had the luxury of having a mom as an educator.
I mean, not when I was in school.
Oh, okay.
I mean, we went to college at the same time. But again, like working class kid in Detroit. You know, there is, you know, it was, you went to school so that you could, and this is what I think by and large, a lot of you know, first generation families really experienced. Like, you went to school to have a better life.
Yeah.
And I think it was a mix. And there were like, there were sometimes competing purposes. If we were to land on one, you know, there was a political purpose because this was a particular kind of country we were in, where we learned to be democratic citizens. Like, we were learning to be like good people in the community, and school, you know, ensured that. It's where we learned discipline.
Well, and we learned discipline, and, you know, jump in there for Johnny Lupinacci right there, John, you know, discipline, but it's still this for later in life. And John, I said, we were talking during a break about my daughter. My daughter's really frustrated about this question, because the question that came, that she keeps dealing with, it's not even a question. She's like, Dad, I don't want school to be for something. Everything's, it's always making me anxious, because it's always making me think that everything is about the future, and I just want to live in the present. And that's where, when we were coming into break, you're kind of hitting on a mindfulness here, because if school is only for the future, how are we setting kids up, possibly my daughter, for even like a sense of anxiety?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting to hear your experiences on how you guys viewed school, because I came from a pretty fortunate background. I grew up in the north suburbs of Chicago, pretty wealthy area, two college-educated parents whose parents were college-educated as well, right? And for me, through, let's say, sixth grade, seventh grade, school was for just learning stuff, and it was great. It was awesome. Once I hit high school in that sort of atmosphere, it became highly competitive, right? About who's going to get into the elite colleges, who's going to be on honor roll, and that kind of stuff. And that just turned me off. Like, I didn't care about any of that stuff. But for you know, what school should be for is to learn stuff, right? Now, that's going to be in the service of our future lives to some degree, right? Mm-hmm. So your daughter should be learning stuff that is going to prepare her for a future in which she can thrive. But if school is designed well, right, if the curriculum is good, if the course or program is solid, if we've thought through these things, that's all going to take care of itself, right? She's going to be educated. She's going to know stuff. She's going to have developed a sense of self-efficacy and agency that allows her to take charge of problems that are unfamiliar or uncomfortable, and she can go out and succeed. I don't know if I was just clueless or whatever, but you know, I was sort of the era, and I graduated from college in 1992. It's like, I have my college degree. I'm going to go get a job somewhere. It's probably not going to be my lifetime job, but it's going to be a job. I'm going to support myself. I'm going to figure stuff out. And I've had a very interesting, varied, quite changeable set of careers as an adult that, as I tell students I work with, like, what is your goal? My goal is to wake up in the morning, generally looking forward to what I have to do that day. And given the fact that I have to work in order to, you know, put a roof over my head and get the things I want in life, I should have work that does that. And that becomes my orientation. So that's what we should be helping your daughter to do, to help her figure out what is it that, you know, turns her on in terms of the work she wants to do and make her way in the world. Why shouldn't school be doing that in the present, preparing her for a future where she's going to have to do that over and over and over again?
Okay, but there's the question you just asked. Why do we not do this? This is the, you know, because by you asking this question, the fact that, you know, eight different authors kind of pointed this out and none of them hit on the engaged. I mean, aren't we really talking, though, about this? This isn't just a little blip that my daughter's dealing with. This is, you know, Johnny said it earlier in the first part of the show. Aren't we dealing with a systemic issue that hasn't really engaged the question of what is school for? You know, as we think about that, I think about this, and I think about Michael Fullan's work that really talks about this as being, you know, look, if you want to have change and if you want things to be different, you might need to first look at the way things are already organized, because chances are you're getting exactly the way things are organized. And so the fact that we have school that's not about engagement, but it is about preparation for later, well, of course, isn't that what we've just designed? So we have a school system. It's a problem. We have to engage the system. John Warner is our guest. John, we're going to hold you over for a little break. Busted Pencils, Fully Leaded, back after the break. Busted Pencils, Fully Leaded, Education Talk, Educated Educators Talking Education. The number is 844-967-2789. Our guest, John Warner, check out his piece in his Educational Endeavors Substack, What is School For? We started coming out of this and saying, okay, we think school's supposed to be for engagement. And great. And we could say what engagement looks like. We can define it. We can talk about it. We can go like, oh my goodness. But when we go back to that Gallup poll, John, that shows that, students from the time they enter kindergarten all the way up through the 10th grade essentially disengage every year they're in school. What we want in the fact of school being for engagement, we're not going to get it because we're actually getting exactly what the system is designed to do. And so, John, as we're coming into that, so if the system is designed to not engage us, what do we do as individual teachers, faculty members, people that want to see engagement as our key issue, suggestions for what we might be wanting to try to do?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough, right? Because you're working, you can't change the fundamental conditions under which you work. Mm-hmm. But you can change your individual pedagogical practices in your course. And that was sort of the journey that I undertook that resulted in Why You Can't Write, which is sort of the, when I'm feeling grandiose, I call it my manifesto about how we should teach writing. And then the writer's practice, which is the actual curriculum that I used to teach writing. And my process, and this happened over a series of years, was really like, how do I get students fundamentally interested in writing? I didn't care about academic writing per se. I didn't care about like teaching them how to do a research paper. It started with the fundamentals. What is interesting and engaging about the act of writing? Because there's nothing about writing that is inherently uninteresting. In fact, it's the opposite. Writing is an interesting thing to do when you are allowed to write. It is both a way to process your own thoughts, which is how I use it all the time, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know what I think until I start writing. And then to express your thoughts with an audience in the world. And the thing that distressed me with the students I was seeing in, say, a first-year writing course in college is not that they necessarily couldn't write or their skills were poor. It's that they had no concept of writing as a communicative act, as something that is meant to be read and appreciated in the world, as opposed to something that's going to be assessed by a teacher, often against a rubric, in order to sort of pass some sort of bar of proficiency. And this had killed them. It had killed their spirits. It had made them anxious about writing, and it had disconnected them from the ways that writing is fundamentally pleasurable. So that was my first thing, was like, I'm going to make writing interesting to them. The act of writing is going to be engaging to them. And it works. I mean, it works. If people look up my stuff, I have, like testimonies from students in classes who use the writer's practice and say like, wow, I was really bored doing 5-paragraph essays over and over again. And then I started doing some of this stuff. And it's like, I can think again. I can be a human being.
Well, you gave them permission. And I'm wondering if this is kind of like a larger pedagogy thing. You gave them permission to try it as opposed to expected them to complete it or, right? Because I thought, I said this before the show started, I don't know that I'm a good writer now, but I didn't realize that writing, what you just said, John, was a communication tool for me. I knew I wanted to write stuff, but every time I tried to write stuff, I was told it wasn't what I wasn't writing correctly. I wasn't using the right sentence structure. My handwriting, God forbid, wasn't neat enough, so no one could read it. You know, and so it was never a process to communicate. It was a task to get finished and get graded on. So when I think about learning in that whole context, it's not just writing, right? I mean, why, when we talk about the environmental stuff that Johnny and I talk about, if we're learning environmental science, is it so that we can have a repository of facts, or is it to engage the world in complex problems with climate change? Because if it's to engage the world with climate change, putting across a whole bunch of facts as the purpose of why you're in environmental science kind of takes away the idea where kids are going, this, I wonder about this sometimes when kids might be sitting there going like, this information sounds cool, but I don't know why I would ever use it. And that's what we're missing, that part about going. Now, here's a question, though. Are we afraid, though, when we talk about the system, is the system is doing exactly what it's supposed to do? And is it doing what it's supposed to do because we're actually afraid of fully asking students to jump in and ask questions and engage?
I think that's a big part of it. One of the fundamental truths of something like learning to write is you're going to make mistakes. Writing is an extended exercise in failure, right? In falling short of the goals you set for your own desired expression. And the response we give to writing, what you are articulating, often deters students from taking the kind of productive risks around what they write about, how they write about it, and the way they express themselves, because we are setting them, as I say in my book, like the bar of proficiency is far too low. We don't want anybody aiming for proficiency. Writing is something that we continuously improve on. There is no terminal proficiency as a writer. And so we want students, I call it the writer's practice, because we want them building their practices over and over again with each new thing they write. And that requires us to be open to what they have to say to us. Mm-hmm. And that is scary. And to respect the ways they want to say it, which does require occasionally accepting that the world changes between the time, you know, I was a young person and how I am today. And we don't have a lot of room for that respect for students in that way when they're expressing themselves. You know, the shame of it is there's much to be learned from students when we let them express themselves. And there's much for them to learn, you know, about themselves and from others when we allow this. But, you know, the goal of proficiency and creating something that passes the assessment always mitigates against that, always prevents that from happening. When students can get around it, sometimes interesting things happen, but it's, you know, it's more of a fluke than something that the system, you know.
Thing, right? My goodness, the fact that they have to try to figure out their way around it to learn. And we just think about that. And Johnny, we've talked about this too, as we're coming out of the pandemic and all the pearl clutching a month ago with the drop in the NAEP scores, you know, which to me was a perfect example of what you're just saying, John, because, well, the system, that's the concern. You know, and Johnny, we said, well, what happened during the pandemic? Kids, families, teachers, we lost loved ones. We lost time with each other. We were isolated. People learned to communicate via Zoom and stuff. It was like there was a whole lot to talk about what we learned, about what we experienced, about instead of looking at the pandemic as this monumental time of learning loss, what did we learn during that time? We interviewed one of our teacher friends who came on here and just said, you know, as she came in, kids are oozing. That was her word. They're oozing to want to talk about their experiences, about what happened to them during the pandemic. And the fact, though, that we come up with, well, we got to get your test scores up before you're allowed to talk about what happened to you. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that how this kind of comes across to a kid is that, you know what? I know you're kind of stressed out about what happened over the past years, but we got to get your test scores back up. Johnny Lupinacci thought.
Yeah, man. And I'm sorry I keep freezing up because my internet connection's pretty spotty out here. But yeah, no, my thoughts are aligned with this conversation in ways that I'm really excited that we're thinking about deeply what engagement means and how it's different than compliance and how structurally so often we sort of structure ourselves into teaching through compliance, even when we don't set out to, or, you know, we know it's not ideal. You know, John reminded us of like class sizes. Tim, you're bringing up this like this like gut response to test scores and to them guiding our decision making. But when we really center engagement, right, and the health and the long term quality of life for all of our students, you know, things look a little bit different. And again, it reminds us like when is enough enough to where we can begin to make change from these big questions around engagement over compliance, right? Quality of life over, you know, like you were saying, like economic purpose of education, like really a balance here. It's for now as much as it is for the future. And so I love when John says asking simple questions like, what is it you love to do, right? And how can you connect that? Or being a writing teacher who gets to engage students in writing as a transformational praxis, where we like are really in conversation with not only an audience, but our writer selves. And we develop that in our writing education. And so I just get really excited about us taking time to slow down and ask these questions. Because as much as school might be for engaging students, it's also to engage educators in the community in the good work of teaching the next generation, right? So it's all the way around. Are we sites of engagement, or are we sort of this forced compliance that's self-imposed in a lot of ways? So being really reflective of even my own teaching practices all the time, how am I slipping in? I always talk about, Tim, with you, school seeps in. Yeah. Or I know it, I'm teaching exactly the opposite of what I'm teaching about how to teach. So we catch ourselves all the time in that. And so what does it mean to be engaged in an engaging education?
It's interesting. You know, one of the things you make me think of is the thing I try to keep in mind about that difference between compliance and, you know, sort of freedom on the other end. And engagement, one of the things I realized over the years as I became kind of pro-freedom for students and engagement first is engagement is the thing that makes space for increased rigor, for higher achievement. One of the things that drives me crazy, particularly about teaching writing, is that with this compliance model, it's like, well, if we can get them to this level, then we know they can write. And it's like, well, that's, you know, as I said before, proficiency is too low a bar. I would much rather have a student conceive something they want to write that's too big a swing, you know, where I would have students come and say, oh, I want to do this for this particular assignment. I'd be like, man, that's too big. you can't do that. I'm like, I want to do it anyway. And I was right. It was too big. But what they did in that thing that maybe didn't get all the way over the line, if I was grading it traditionally, or if I was interested in a rubric or compliance, they still learned much more about writing than if I had hemmed them into a sort of fixed assignment that I want each student to complete in a highly similar way. That's not learning all that much. It can maybe demonstrate something to somebody else who's you know, assessing me as an instructor, but it's not learning. It's, you know, I think this is probably a sentiment you guys get into on the show a lot, is like there's a difference between schooling and learning.
Yeah.
And to the extent that it's not that school is inherently bad, but if schooling dominates over learning, we have to think again and re-inject learning into school.
So we bring back that conversation, too. It's going to what is school for, which is what you ask right there. And, you know, keep thinking about that. I know we're getting short, John. There it is. I was like, where is Evan to let me know where we are? John Warner, our guest, check out his piece, Educational Endeavors, Substack, What is School For? John Warner, thank you so much for your time on Busted Pencils. And as we say, you truly busted pencils, man.
Yeah, man. Thank you for the work you do and for the conversation tonight, John.
Hey, it was a lot of fun. I appreciate it.
When we get back, Johnny and Tim will break it down. More Busted Pencils right after the break. Johnny Lupinacci likes this one. Busted Pencils.
Yes, I do.
Fully leaded education talk. Educated educators talking education. Last segment, 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. We had a great guest, John Warner. His piece, What is School For? Questions to anybody out there listening right now wants to call in. What do you think? What is school for? After you heard our guest talk about it, you heard Johnny and I kind of breaking it down. But Johnny, you know, back to this, the point you were talking about, the engagement versus compliance, like, give me a little bit more, like what, like.
Yeah, I mean, I love it. So, and John spoke to this too, and we like to talk a lot about it when we teach, and we do it oftentimes on the show too, the differences between education or learning and schooling. And I think that's a really good thing for listeners to kind of, for us to unpack for listeners is, you know, we have the structures of schooling. I call it planned school. We're all, you know, however many years we were in schools, we're all sort of socialized to the routine of school. And it's a lot of compliance. It's a lot of sit and get. And even when it's pretty exciting, it's structured in ways that are often antithetical or, you know, run in opposition to how we know children learn differently and the different needs of children as learners. You know, there is somewhere out there, we can even pull it for a future show, but there's a really great kind of like animated video about sort of the history of schools. And it's great because it kind of like, it kind of pokes at these things.
Talking about
like
Sir Ken Robinson's video?
Exactly. Sir Ken Robinson gives us this great kind of overview of like, you know, the only thing we know about how we do school is that we somehow decided at a certain point to make it mandatory, compulsory education. I happen to be a big fan of it, but compulsory education, but not of compulsory schooling.
Mm.
And this is a tough thing to think about because, you know, Sir Ken Robinson lays out there that whole idea of like, well, we take kids and the only thing they generally have in common is that they were born around the same time. And we throw like 30 some of them. And even John reminded us like in higher education, even in against best practices of writing, right? We have like 80 to 100 kids all around the same age in a room with one person who's not that age. And sometimes there's not even that much of an age gap, but really like they have sort of content knowledge. And the expectation is that everyone's going to, you know, emerge as sort of enlightened or, you know, or educated from the structures of schooling, which run antithetical to all the things we know about how young people or even adolescent learners or young adult learners learn. And, you know, so it's sort of this idea that we play school. And we often do this as adults. Many of us will gripe and complain about like professional development or training modules. It was like, we know what's best for adult learners, but just like playing school, we don't often do it. And so it then becomes a matter, and we talk about this on the shows, like who do we find responsible? And we like to blame teachers a lot. And I hope we move past that, at least in this show, because we're all either former teachers or teaching teachers or really tangent to the hard work that teachers are out there doing. But teachers live this every day. They're constantly working against habits of schooling and trying.
Oh, and there it is, Johnny. We got us hung up there. Habits of schooling. We're back, you know, a little bit frozen there. But yeah, I think about that, you know, this idea of, you know, schooling. And Johnny, you made me think about this. If you come, I hear you kind of trying to come back in there, but you made me think about this. I wrote about this, you know, this idea, and I see you're back, Johnny, but you're making me think about going, like, in one sense, the schooling, the way you talk about it, is such a model that, you know, from the time, and John talks about, from the, you know, you're 5 years old, you get into compulsory schooling, you stay in compulsory schooling in some way, shape, or form through the age of 22, at least. And you think about going, that apprenticeship of observation, of going, what does it mean to, and this is kind of the problem with so many people go, well, anybody can teach, right? Because everybody's watched teachers their entire lives and they've watched schooling. And so sometimes even when we say, well, engagement's the purpose, and people go, I know engagement's the purpose, but I don't know how to enact that pedagogy. It's because we have such a deep history exposure to what you were saying, a structure of schooling that was meant to communicate ideas so that you would be ready for some future time, as John was saying. And that apprenticeship of observation, us watching how schooling goes. The fact is that, John, you said even to yourself, you're like, I find myself sometimes going, what am I doing? I'm teaching exactly the way I'm trying to teach my future teachers not to teach. You know, like, and when you said that in the last segment, I was like, oh my God, that's the heart of the issue. It's like, what do you do when you find yourself, you know, in that moment? And this is, I think, the tough thing for teachers to really wrestle with too. And we hear this when you talk about teachers leaving and the system that's up against them, you know, when their retention. And I've talked about teachers saying, hey, just let me teach. You know, and here we are at this critical point. Let's ask these big questions. What is school for? Because if school is for engagement, well, then what is teaching for, Johnny Lupinacci? What are we teaching for is another question, right?
Yeah, I love it. And how are we teaching? Are we teaching aligned to compliance? Do we expect compliance for our students? Or do we strive for engagement? And what does that look like when we're teaching? Because for me, that's always been a quick litmus test. Right? Because school seeps in. That's the phrase I always kind of use with my students and even with myself. It's like school seeps in. We got so many years of primary socialization of on the job observation. Most of us, by the time we're teachers, we have 20 some years of being in a classroom and playing school. And so that's a lot to unpack. But yeah. I ask us all the time, what is discipline without punishment? What is engaging practices without forced compliance? And so when we begin to ask simple questions about that around like assignments, classroom expectations, it helps us to think differently about what we might do. So for me, it starts there. It starts with how we're teaching, and then we start to, it illuminates structures in schools, right, that are in the way of teaching with engagement centered. So then we can begin to talk about it with our leadership and with school boards and things. What can we do differently to support engaging education? You know, so I appreciate
there it is.
John asked. Yep.
Johnny Lupinacci dropping the bomb there. Engagement. Our guest, John Warner, check out his piece on Educational Endeavor Substack. What is school for? Busted Pencils, fully leaded. Educated educators talking education. See you next week.
Or log on to bustedpencils.com for blogs, podcasts, and more. Join us again next Tuesday for Busted Pencils on Devil Radio 92.7.
Hey, this is Tim from Rise Against here on Busted Pencils Radio.
This is Matt Damon on Busted Pencils Radio. Please stop bothering me and just ask my mom already.
We are Busted Pencils!